What is going on, guys? We are here tonight. It is a Friday night to talk about SmackDown, another episode in the books, and a show where we had two SummerSlam matches that were either announced or teased, two championship matches, Cody Rhodes and Solo Sikoa, for the WWE Championship is official. LA Knight and Logan Paul for the United States title. Not official, but it will be. That is the direction they are headed in after LA Knight had a contract in hand. No Logan Paul tonight, but he made it very clear that he was coming after the U.S. title at SummerSlam. Show closed with another Bloodline segment designed to put heat on Solo Sikoa and the entire group as we make our way towards SummerSlam. They have taken great pains to make Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu and the entire Bloodline out to be as much of a believable, credible threat to Cody Rhodes as possible, which is what they have to do if Solo is going to be next in line for a shot at the title. So they did what they had to do. Randy Orton was involved in this angle. Unfortunately, poor Randy Orton got left laying. He was destroyed at the end of SmackDown tonight. And all Cody Rhodes could do is watch helplessly as his friend who came to his aid was destroyed by the Bloodline and left in a pile of rubble at ringside. And that is how they went off the air tonight. Outside of those final 20 minutes or so, this was a very boring episode. Not a lot else going on tonight. So we're going to talk about those two segments and everything else that happened in between. This is your Friday Night SmackDown review. It is Friday, July 12th, 2024. I am the Solemn Oscar. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Friday night. Do me a favor, like and subscribe. We hit 81,000 subscribers a few days ago. So we are now 81,000 plus. I thank you for that. So please go ahead and subscribe. Super chats are open. Any that come on in during the stream, I will be reading them a little bit later on. And I'm going to try to get you out of here as quickly as possible. That is my goal tonight. They open with Tiffany Stratton, because this was the first SmackDown coming out of Money in the Bank on Saturday. So we had Tiffany Stratton, the winner of the women's Money in the Bank ladder match on Saturday, the only match in the history of the Wrestling Observer newsletter to win both best match and worst match in the Observer polls. Never happened before. She bragged about being the youngest Ms. Money in the Bank ever. And as she was bragging, Bayley, the WWE Women's Champion, came down to the ring to offer some advice, because she herself is a former Money in the Bank winner back in 2019, and she assumed that Tiffany Stratton didn't even know what WWE was back in 2019. Tiffany said that that's like a million years ago. Bayley told Stratton that if she plans to cash in on her, she would be the first female winner of Money in the Bank to cash in unsuccessfully. We would have a failed cash in. Enter Nia Jax, the queen of the ring and the number one contender to the women's title at SummerSlam. She says she will take the title from Bayley. Bayley said this is not NXT hugger Bayley. This is not 2017 Bayley that Nia put on the shelf with a legitimate injury for several months. Bayley said that she's the Grand Slam and Royal Rumble winner. She said that she will embarrass Nia at SummerSlam. Bayley questioned what Tiffany would do. And Nia called Tiffany her own personal Barbie doll. And Bayley wound up to go punch Nia, but Tiffany hooked her arm and stopped her. So Bayley hit Tiffany instead. Nia knocked Bayley down. Meechin showed up with a kendo stick to fight off both heels and cleared them from the ring. The only real question here, going into SummerSlam, is whether or not Tiffany Stratton is going to cash in on Bayley, or if she's going to cash in on Nia Jax. Because I could see it go either way. You know, I could see Bayley eking out a win over Nia, and then out comes Tiffany to cash in. I could see Nia winning the championship, and then Tiffany cashes in on her supposed new friend here. So it's going to be one or the other. I think we are going to get a cash in, you know, most likely at SummerSlam. But I don't see Tiffany Stratton being the first woman I mean, of all the Money in the Bank winners, I don't see Tiffany Stratton becoming the first woman to cash in unsuccessfully. That I don't see. So whether it happens next month or it happens later on, I think we are looking at the new champion, but who will she be beating? That's the question. Do you do two title changes? You have Nia win and hold it for a minute and then have Tiffany cash in on her? I don't know. I don't know that that's even worth it. But this led right into the first match, which was Nia Jax against Meechan. Crowd really got into this down the stretch, especially with the near falls. Bayley was in Meechan's corner. Stratton stayed outside. She was in Nia's corner. Nia dominated for a while before Meechan made a comeback. Stratton placed the kendo stick in the ring and then climbed up onto the apron, distracted the referee until Bayley pulled her down. Meechan hit a tornado DDT on Nia for a near fall. Then she got scooped up for a Samoan drop, and Nia followed with the Annihilator for the win. After the match, Bayley stopped another Annihilator attempt that she was setting up for. Tiffany hit Bayley with the briefcase. So they're double-teaming the champion. And Nia goes, well, really, they both go to leave the ring. But Nia goes to leave the ring, and Tiffany is standing there, and she's looking at the briefcase, and she starts to have some thoughts going through her head. And the fans can pick up on what's going on here. And Tiffany walks over to the referee, and she says, yeah, you know what? I want to cash in. Because Bayley is down. Only Nia Jax walks back over and has a look on her face like, what the hell are you doing here? And Tiffany just kind of plays it off like, oh, no, everything's fine. Come, let's go. And then they both leave together. We had a video package that aired with the Bloodline. Remember that segment that closed SmackDown a couple weeks ago? Maybe it was last week. It was like the last 2 minutes of the show. And it showed Solo Sikoa sitting at a table, literally the head of the table. And he had Tama Tonga on one side, Tonga Loa on the other, and Jacob Fatu standing behind him. So they must have shot this the same day they shot that. It was the same setup. But Solo was talking about building a more powerful, more aggressive bloodline. He talked about how the bloodline had all the gold at one point, including the tag team titles. Solo said everybody would acknowledge him by the end of the night, and Fatu placed the Ulafala around his neck. The tag team titles, you say? What was it that I said last week about transitioning the titles from Waller in Theory to DIY in preparation for another title change soon to come? We had an interview recorded earlier in the day in the stands, in the empty arena.
I am the learning tree.
Hey, NWO Matt.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for the learning tree. There he goes. As quickly as he showed up, he disappeared. But there was an interview recorded earlier in the day in the stands with Byron Saxton and Andrade. And Andrade, he didn't really say much before Carmelo Hayes showed up. They did put up some subtitles. He was speaking English, but they put up subtitles, which honestly, for an Andrade promo, I can understand. And then he started talking some Spanish, excuse me, and then Carmelo Hayes showed up. And he asked why Byron wasn't talking to him. And Andrade said the people labeled him the MVP of the Money in the Bank ladder match. Now, maybe I missed something here. I think everybody in the Money in the Bank match had a chance to shine, but was anybody calling Andrade the MVP of that Money in the Bank match? Maybe I missed that. Carmelo boasted about being a first-round draft pick and, you know, going on about himself. When Byron asked him what's next, Andrade pointed at Hayes and said, him. And as it is, the two of them are going to be having a match on SmackDown next week. We have Baron Corbin and Apollo Crews against Angel and Humberto. Before the commercial break, there was a spot where Apollo Crews launched his partner. He launched Baron Corbin out of the ring through the air. wiped out both Angel and Humberto on the floor. That was wild. And that got a big reaction, too, but that was wild. Angel locked Corbin in a gory special, and the spot was Humberto was going to flip into the ring and kind of take him over. Almost like a blockbuster. But the spot got fucked up. Very poorly timed. Later on, Corbin delivered a shot to Escobar. Santos Escobar was out on the floor with Electra Lopez. And so he just popped him right in the mouth, and then Corbin wiped out Humberto and himself in doing a clothesline over the barricade by the timekeeper's area. In the ring, Cruz was about to finish off Angel when Escobar ran in with a knee strike, since the referee was distracted, and Angel finished off Apollo with a wing clipper. See, he signed a new 3-year deal, a sweet new 3-year contract, Angel Garza did. And he got the win here for his team. Crowd really got behind Corbin here in the babyface role. I'm not totally surprised by that because Corbin got himself over in NXT, and then he was doing the Wolf Dogs thing for a while with Bron Breakker, and that seemed to get over. It's amazing what happens when you strip away all of the gimmick silliness. Because for so many years, we had King Corbin and Constable Corbin, and we had Happy Corbin and Bum-Ass Corbin. And, you know, when he was broke and homeless in the street, that was when he was the most entertaining. But it was just one silly gimmick to the next. And it just wasn't working. You know, it made for just terrible TV, and it wasn't doing him any favors. When he went to NXT, he would do these vignettes where it was basically like no gimmicks, right? It was all stripped away, and we just got Baron Corbin. And he was able to get over on his own. Now, can that translate into a major babyface push on the main roster? I don't know if I'd use the word major, but, you know, tonight was an example of how much it can work. You know, the crowd can get behind him. Look, I will admit, you know, the crowd got behind The Miz when he turned babyface, right? Several months ago, they got behind him more than I thought they would. So if it works for The Miz, then I think it could work for Baron Corbin. And I don't know if they plan to keep him and Apollo together, you know, on a regular basis or not, but they could use some new tag teams. So it wouldn't be the worst idea if they wanted to do something more permanently with him and Cruz. Even though they didn't get the win here, I don't necessarily think that would be a bad idea. So Apollo was good here, but Corbin was a real standout to me. We go to the back, and we see the WWE champion. We see Cody Rhodes sitting in the locker room, and next to him is the WWE championship. In comes Randy Orton. And Randy Orton takes a seat right next to him. What's the first thing that Randy Orton does? Randy Orton is staring down at the WWE title. Not the first time he's done that in the last several weeks. He said he heard what Solo Sikoa said, and he assumed that Cody would find himself in the ring tonight with a bunch of Samoans. He said he knew Cody well enough to know that he wouldn't want him out there, but he said that he would be there if things went sideways. Orton said that he will always and forever have Cody's back. Orton said that Kevin Owens feels the same way, but he's not there. Says Owens loves to fight, but he told him to stay home with his family because his family needs him right now more than they do. Orton said that once everything with the bloodline was finally over, Cody would have a lot of men coming after the WWE Championship. And again, he looked at that title. And he said that he would have Cody's back then, too. You know, he sounds genuine. Every time we hear Orton in these promos, you know, he sounds very genuine and very honest in what he's saying, but he's a snake. That's his gimmick. He's the Viper. He can't be trusted. That RKO, when it comes, it's going to come out of nowhere. But what happened at the end of the show, like what was said here in this segment is very important. Especially as it ties into the angle that we saw at the end of the show. LA Knight was out to the ring next, and he had a folder in his hand. Said he's not going to make any excuses for Money in the Bank. Didn't go his way. And so he started thinking, Money in the Bank contract or not, He called himself the walking embodiment of Money in the Bank. He showed footage of the Money in the Bank qualifier from 2 weeks ago where LA Knight pinned Logan Paul. Something else very important happened that night on SmackDown, other than him beating Logan Paul and qualifying for Money in the Bank. He said he pinned the United States champion. And with that in mind, he picked up the folder. He said, "What's inside the folder here has Nick Aldis's signature on it." It was a contract for a United States championship match at SummerSlam. He pulled out a pen. He signed the contract. He said, "It's got my contract, or my signature, rather. It's got Aldis's signature." He said, "The only thing missing is a signature from Logan Paul." So what he wants to do is have Logan Paul come down and sign the contract right now, but he can't do that. And he can't do that because, surprise, surprise, Logan Paul is not here tonight. One way or another, he says he will get his contract signed, and at SummerSlam, he will own him and that belt, not because Logan Paul isn't good, but because he's better, and that's just a fact of life. I'd like to remind you all that Logan Paul won the United States Championship in November. And in the months since then, he has defended that U.S. title exactly two times. That's it. Twice. Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. He's worse than Roman Reigns. So it is long since time to have the United States Championship change hands if he's going to be defending the title two or three times a year. So it's been a while since we've seen a title match. And yet, despite all of this, I don't, as I sit here today, and we're still 3 weeks out from SummerSlam, so maybe I'll feel differently when I see what they come up with on these next few weeks of shows. But as I sit here now, I don't get the impression. I don't get the feeling that SummerSlam is it. I don't get the feeling that they're going to do the title change there. I don't get the feeling that they're going to blow this off in 3 weeks. The last time they met, now granted it wasn't a singles match, but the last time they met, he pinned Logan Paul. So ask yourself this question. Do you honestly think that they're going to go into SummerSlam, coming off that, and just have LA Knight pin him again? I don't know. I don't get that feeling. It feels to me like they're going to want to drag this out for a little bit longer and milk this thing for all it's worth. Now, I would love to be wrong because I think it's long since time that LA Knight holds championship gold. He went after the WWE title. He didn't get it. I thought they were going to do Logan Paul and LA Knight at WrestleMania. They didn't do it. Now it's SummerSlam. It's time. Time is now. But I just don't get that feeling. I don't get the feeling that they're going to want to blow this thing off in 3 weeks. I think they're going to want to get a little more mileage out of it. But whenever this comes to an end, LA Knight is definitely coming out of this with the United States title. I mean, they've been biding their time with him. He really hasn't done much. And yet he's still super over. But at some point, something's got to give. And if he's not going to be in the mix for the main title, which he's not going to be anytime soon, then the U.S. title needs to find its way around his waist sooner rather than later. I'm not sure it's going to be SummerSlam, though. That's just how I feel. We had Blair Davenport one-on-one with Naomi. Naomi had athletic tape on her shoulder coming out of the Money in the Bank ladder match on Saturday. So Davenport made that her target. Meet Huncho, holy shit, a $100 super chat. Hey, Meet, thank you, man. That means a lot, seriously. Puts a smile on my face. Unfortunately, I'm in case you couldn't hear it, I'm dealing with COVID. You heard me on Wednesday. I said, I'm not feeling too good, you know, and that's what it turned out to be. So we're gutting through it, and that makes me feel good. So thank you. Thank you for the bomb. I appreciate it. But again, we had Blair Davenport and Naomi here. So we had a series of back and forth pin attempts. Davenport turned her back to Naomi to question the referee's count. Naomi drilled Davenport with a knee strike, slammed her down ass first, and then hooked her over into a pin to win the match. So Naomi came into this match with an injury and still beat Blair Davenport. So not the best sign here for Ms. Davenport. I guess she got her revenge, though, later in the show, because Naomi was in the back, and she bumped into Bianca and Jade, and they were having a conversation. And then Davenport showed up, and she was being all, you know, deferential to her and saying, you know, I guess I'll just have to do better next time, you know, like you beat me fair and square. And she put her hand out for handshake, and Naomi was kind of suspicious, but she shook her hand. Davenport walked away, but then of course she came back and hit her in the back and knocked Naomi down. So there'll be a rematch, and I guess Davenport can make up for her loss there. Just amazing to me, though, because, you know, Davenport debuted on this show a few months ago now, right? She came up in the draft, right? So they had the draft back in I guess it would have been in May. And we've seen her in a lot of backstage segments and backstage interactions with people. She's only had one other match on this show. And it was a triple threat Money in the Bank qualifier, which she did not win. So now she's 0-2 on SmackDown so far. Not a good sign. You know, I remember a time when they used to debut people and they would, you know, give them some warm-up matches, and they would give them some wins under their belt and try to establish them before they started beating them. They don't do things like that anymore. But as with everything, the key is in the follow-up here. So if her and Naomi end up back in the ring together and she picks up a big win, that's all it takes, you know, to get her into a winning groove here on this show. But it's tough because, again, you know, you only get one chance to make a good first impression. So you certainly don't want to be making a habit out of beating this woman too often. You know, at some point, she's got to win that first match. We had DIY against Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. This was a rematch from last week. This was a rematch for the WWE Tag Team Championship. So DIY won the titles last week. They finally got that big title win, and it was a great moment, and the crowd went, you know, nuts for it. In the first minute of this match, Johnny Gargano went sailing through the ropes, got caught with a forearm shot by Theory on the way down, and he ate the floor. I mean, he took a header and smacked the floor outside. Then Waller is on the ropes. He's got a hold of Ciampa in a DDT position. And what he tries to do is a tilt-a-whirl DDT, basically, from the ropes to the apron, so not in the ring. And it got all fucked up. I think what happened here is that Ciampa, he kind of lost his grip on him. So Waller just kind of went down, landed on his feet. Ciampa dropped and sold anyway. And it just looked like shit. This was a weird night for Waller. There was another point in this match where I think something got a little messed up. It just looked like he had an off night tonight. Because otherwise, Waller, you know, so far, this main roster run has looked pretty good. You know, really from the moment they called him up and he had that first match, he's a pretty solid worker, but just had an off night. So late in the match, Waller accidentally caught Theory with a leaping knee strike. And then he turned into a shatter machine by DIY, who finished him off with their meet in the middle finish to retain the tag team titles. This was a much abbreviated form of last week's match. This went maybe about 7 minutes or so. I think it just existed, honestly, well, for two reasons. Number one, they just wanted to further the tension between Waller and Theory, who clearly are headed for Splitsville any week now. The other purpose it served is for what happened after the match. Now, what happened after the match was we had Jacob Fatu ran out and single-handedly destroyed the tag team champions. He made these two guys look like a couple of chumps. Laid them out all by himself. But on the flip side, He looked like a wild beast in the process. This made Jacob Fatu look like $1 million. So, first he no-sold a DDT by Ciampa. Then he super kicked him into oblivion. Corner hip attack to Gargano. And then a pop-up Samoan drop to Ciampa. I love the way he does these pop-up Samoan drops. Like, when he does it, he throws all of his weight back to where he's like rolling over himself. So the pop-up Samoan drop. Then he hits a double jump springboard moonsault. I think it was onto Gargano. And because Gargano was very close to the ropes, and I thought he was going for the double jump moonsault. And I said, man, this guy's way too close. And then he did the double jump springboard one. So that was, yeah, that got a reaction. People were not expecting that. Then he goes into the opposite corner, hits the double jump, top rope moonsault, sailed through the air, thing of beauty, crushes Tommaso Ciampa. See, so that's for all the people who whined and bitched. Well, I didn't see a whole lot from Jacob Fatu and Money in the Bank. Is this what everybody was raving about and talking about? He did like two moves in the match. This was to silence those fools. I could have done without the tag team champions being neutered. Okay, and it's no different than... I like Jacob Fatu. But you got to call a spade here. If it was anybody else in this segment and they sent him out there, if it was Braun Strowman, you know, being sent out there, or Omos, and he crushed the tag team champions by himself, people would look at that and go, oh, well, way to make the tag team champions look like a bunch of jabronis. And that's what they did here. But at the same time, it made Jacob Fatu look like a scary motherfucker. They have done a fantastic job in a very short period of time making Fatu look like an absolute uncontrollable badass. An uncontrollable badass who can only be tamed by one man, tamed by Solo Sikoa. Because he answers to Solo, he acknowledges Solo, he's the only one that has any sort of control over him for now. It will not always be that way. I think in the end it will end up being Solo's undoing. At some point he will no longer be able to control this man. But I mentioned earlier the reference in the earlier Solo segment to how the Bloodline used to have the tag team titles. And I even said last week when I was thinking, okay, who's next in line for DIY? Theory and Waller, they got their rematch, they lost. They're done, that's it. Then you have Legado del Fantasma, and you've got Pretty Deadly. Yeah, there's like a handful of teams. The Street Profits. Are they really going to do the Street Profits and DIY, babyface against babyface? I don't think they're going to, I don't get the impression they're going into that. What would make sense, though, is if they wanted to put the titles on the Bloodline. You have G.O.D., the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga, Tonga Loa. Next in line to beat DIY and bring the titles into the Bloodline. I'm not saying that the Bloodline needs them. They really don't. Like, do they need to have the tag team titles and hold them hostage? They don't need them. But I really think that's why they transitioned the titles now, when they did, over to Gargano and Ciampa. And I think based on what happened here in this segment, you know, Gargano and Ciampa, they shouldn't take this lying down. They should have, you know, real issue now with the Bloodline coming out of what they did to them tonight. So this could very easily lead to the Bloodline, maybe at SummerSlam against DIY for the tag team titles, because, I mean, we really should have at least one tag team title match on that card. You have two sets of tag teams. Well, actually, I take that back. You technically have three sets, including the women, of tag team titles in this company. You're not going to have one defended at your second biggest show of the year? That would be fucking ridiculous. And of all the possibilities, the one that seems the most likely to me is not the women's tag team titles being defended. It's not Finn Balor and JD McDonagh defending the tag team titles. It would be DIY against the Bloodline. We'll see if that's the direction they go in. But as Fatu is waiting in the ring, the rest of the Bloodline made their way out, led by Solo Sikoa, for the closing segment here on this show tonight. Solo asked to be acknowledged. He said that he put his brother Jimmy down because he wouldn't acknowledge him. Paul Heyman, same thing, the wise man is gone. And then there's Roman Reigns. And the crowd burst into chants of, we want Roman, as they do every single week. He said, you've got me now. You don't deserve Roman Reigns. You got me now. And if Roman Reigns decides to come back, he will acknowledge me as his tribal chief. I thought he said Roman isn't coming back. Now he's left open the possibility that maybe he will. Solo said, though, tonight is about Cody Rhodes. And he said it's Cody's turn to acknowledge him. That brings Cody Rhodes out to the ring. Cody says he's heard everything Solo says, and believe it or not, they want the same thing. Said, of course, they'll need to get Nick Aldis to sign off, but consider it official. Cody Rhodes one-on-one with Solo Sikoa for the WWE title at SummerSlam. But if it was really up to Cody, he said that he wouldn't be waiting for SummerSlam. He would want to fight Solo right here and right now. So now you've got the Wolves, and they are all circling Cody Rhodes in the ring, right? 4-on-1. He came out there all by himself, not very smart. The Wolves are circling the champion. Cody decides to throw the first shot, which is not a wise move, because, of course, he quickly gets overwhelmed. Here comes Randy Orton, who made a vow to Cody earlier in the show, I got your back. Things go sideways, just know. Now and forever, I have your back. So Randy Orton runs down to the ring, disposes of Tama Tonga and Tongaloa in the aisleway. He low bridges Fatu out of the ring, draping DDT to Solo Sikoa. Fatu comes back, though. He mows down Orton. Now they're all ganging up on Randy Orton on the floor outside. Cody ends up getting tied up in the ropes. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find yourself comparing your life to someone else's on social media? I feel like we're all guilty of that at one time or another, especially these people or these influencers who have like hundreds of thousands or millions of followers. They're posting pictures of their fancy houses or vacations they're taking around the world. I'll be sitting here sometimes thinking, how do I get that? I want that. It's easy to envy what other people have or what you think they have because a lot of people project happiness, but that doesn't mean they are happy. There are lots of people who live with far less who end up much happier than those who have money and nice things. Therapy can help you focus on what you want in your life rather than what others have, so you can start living your best life. Therapy can do so many amazing things for you. It can help you understand yourself better and better understand the things that are troubling you and how best to fix them or work around them. Just having someone to talk to about these things can be immensely helpful. It's okay to admit that you don't have all the answers. I don't have all the answers. I wish I did. Sometimes I think I do, and then reality smacks me in the face and I realize, boy, was I wrong. And that's okay. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to work around your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and rest easy, knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Stop comparing and start focusing with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. Now he's tied up in the ropes and he's facing outward so that he can see all of the carnage that's going on outside the ring. And they are destroying Randy Orton with the ring steps. Meanwhile, Cody is dramatically yelling. He's saying, fight me, take me. Like, leave him alone, you know, take me. Corey Graves says that the scene that we are seeing here is eerily similar to how Randy Orton was taken out by the Bloodline and put on the shelf for 18 months. Orton was on his knees, Fatu super kicked him 3 times. Solo told Cody it was all his fault. And then Fatu, Tama Tonga, and Tongaloa picked up Orton for the shield at triple powerbomb, and they planted Randy Orton through the announce desk. Boy, you know, they sure are wearing out that fucking table, aren't they? Every week. Every single week on this show, somebody gets put through the announce desk. Like, I understand it's kind of their thing now, right? They put Heyman through the table. Now they put Orton through the table. We saw it at Money in the Bank. But it's not just them. Like, it just feels like every week, whether it's SmackDown, Raw, whatever, There's always somebody being put through the fucking announce table. You know, you can give it a rest here for a little bit. Doesn't have to be a weekly part of the show. Solo hits Cody, who's still caught up in the ropes. He hits Cody with a Samoan spike. Fatu then places the Ula Fala around Solo's neck, and they all struck the bloodline pose, while Cody Rhodes could do nothing but just stand there and watch, because again, he's all tied up in the ropes and has nowhere to go. They are doing everything that they can to give Solo Sikoa and this new bloodline as much credibility as they possibly can, make them out to be as big of a threat as they possibly can going into SummerSlam. To that end, I thought this segment generated some really good heat. This also felt to me like an injury angle to write Randy Orton off before SummerSlam, with the idea that Kevin Owens, and I don't know what his family situation is going to end up being. We only know what he said last week, which is that, you know, he got the phone call from his dad. His mother was rushed to the hospital, and it was a life or death situation. The way it sounded to me, she wasn't even conscious. And as far as I know, his mother may still be in the hospital. So I don't know what's going on there. And I don't know how long he may or may not be out for. But let's hope that all ends up okay. And they get Kevin Owens back in these next couple of weeks. It feels to me like Orton was written out with the idea that Kevin Owens would return and would avenge his friend. And we may be getting Kevin Owens one-on-one in a singles match with Jacob Fatu at SummerSlam, which I think would be a fantastic match. But I just didn't get the impression that, given what they did here, that Orton was just going to come back in 2 weeks. That's why I thought the more likely match, more than Orton against Fatu, would be Owens against Fatu. And then they could always do Orton against Fatu later on. But also, the thing to remember here about Randy Orton, he pledged in that earlier segment to always have Cody's back no matter what, right? And I told you, the dialogue in that segment and just that segment even existing, it existed for a reason. And it wasn't just to set up him running out at the end of the show. It was there for a reason. He pledges that no matter what, I've got your back. I'm going to come out and I'm going to help you. And Cody is in the ropes. He's all tied up. He is helpless to do anything about it, and he is watching Randy Orton get destroyed. Now the seed has been planted for Randy Orton, whenever it is that, you know, he returns, or a little further down the road, maybe not right away, you know, when he returns, to look at Cody a little bit differently than he did coming into this show tonight, because he pledged his support for his supposed friend, and Cody didn't lift a finger to help him. Now, of course, he couldn't because he was tied up in the ropes, but still, right? Doesn't mean that Randy Orton isn't going to be bothered by it. He got fed to the wolves here. And Cody did nothing. He was tied up in the ropes. All right, so what? He didn't have Randy Orton's back when Randy Orton had his. That is going to come back. That is going to come back, and that is a seed planted for down the road when we do get Cody Rhodes against Randy Orton. So now what we know is that Cody, one-on-one with Solo, is official for SummerSlam. They made that official tonight, which means the return of Roman Reigns is imminent. We don't have to wait very long. So we know Roman is coming back. Once that happens, we're either going to get Roman Reigns one-on-one with Solo Sikoa, and I don't know that they're going to want to go to that right away. We know we're going to get it at some point. I mean, I think it would be crazy if they held off until WrestleMania for that, but maybe they will. If they're not doing Rock and Roman, maybe it's Roman and Solo at WrestleMania next year. But once Roman comes back, we either get Roman against Solo, or we get Roman eventually having to reunite with the Usos to take on this new bloodline. That can take them through the fall, straight into War Games. You know, that could take up the next several months. And then there's still Cody Rhodes against Randy Orton as a program for the WWE title. So, you know, they've set things up nicely here. I think, as far as, you know, taking us through these next several months. But this was a very boring episode up until that last segment. SmackDown's been pretty hot over the last couple of weeks. Tonight was not one of those nights. The last 20 minutes is really the main thing to take away from this show. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of SmackDown tonight? 66% thumbs up. 22.3% thumbs in the middle. And 11.7% thumbs down with 1,000 votes in for the July 12 episode of SmackDown. So go ahead and get those votes on in at Solomonster on Twitter or X, whatever you'd like to call it. All right, let's take a look at your messages here. We got a couple of bombs tonight. It's good. You know, with this mostly boring SmackDown, it kind of felt like a quiet night, but it's always good to see people coming out in full force here. Let's go back to the earlier Super Chats and read through your messages here. Make sure we don't miss anybody. So we'll start out with No Strings Podcast. It is the No Strings Podcast with Rel Simon. What's going on, Rel? It says, couldn't Super Chat in Canada while at Money in the Bank, as YouTube has region and location issues. Money in the Bank was on my birthday. Great show and crowd, longtime fan of yours. Hey, Rel, thank you and happy belated birthday. You got a hell of a show. I thought Money in the Bank was excellent. I know some people that night disagreed with me, but I thought it was an excellent show. Holiday 197, hey Solo, what was the greatest match in Raw history and the greatest match in SmackDown history, in your opinion? You know, I was reminded that we are coming up, I believe, on the 25-year anniversary of SmackDown. Which, if that's the case, I might have to consider doing some kind of countdown. So, in case I do that, and because I have to give that some thought, I don't know about the best SmackDown match, but what I will tell, although I have a couple of candidates in mind, but as far as the best Raw match in history, the first thing that honestly pops into my head when I think best match in Raw history or favorite match in Raw history, and there have been some great ones, I think of the tag team title match on Raw in 2001, Steve Austin and Triple H against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit. The greatest match in Raw history that you will never hear about ever again. So I would probably go with that one. But there have been some great ones on that show over the years, no doubt about it. NWO Matt says, Learning Tree. Yes, he's very fond of the Learning Tree. Face Beer says, how are you feeling tonight, Solo? I've had better days. But thank you for asking. Oh, it's our friend Aldous Dick is back. Nathan Jones should be the next WWE champ. I think Aldous Dick may have Dick for brains with a comment like that. Did you actually see Nathan Jones? And that was 20 years ago. And he sucked then. So I'm going to say no on that. Kevin Dunn's Beaver. Tiffany can cash in on me. Calm down. Calm down. Take a cold shower. Arby. Just showing love to you in the chat. Big respect for Jalen Brunson for taking a pay cut. I hope it is a trip to the finals. Stay safe, everybody. By the way, praise, Grimace, and let's go Mets. I did hear about Brunson. Don't worry, he's going to make plenty of money. It's not like he's taking a pay cut, but he's going to do okay. I think he'll be all right. Josiah Ball. Solo, who do you think is the best wrestler in wrestling today, female and male? Men, it would be Will Ospreay. As far as the best female wrestler today, there's a lot of options there, man. I mean, I'm going to talk more about that on the podcast this Sunday, but women's wrestling right now is honestly, at least in this country, as good as it's ever been, ever, ever. When you look at the talent pool that's out there. So as far as the best female, oh boy, that's tough. You know, it's hard. It's hard for me to go against someone like Julia. We haven't seen her in WWE yet, so there's probably still some people out there who are not familiar with her work. Hard to vote against somebody like that. I don't know. I don't know who I'd go with as my number one, like my A number one pick right now. I don't know. Io Sky, you know what? Io Sky is pretty high up on my list. Io is just fantastic. She really is. And I think after what we saw on Wednesday, we're going to start to see a side of Mariah May that people who were not familiar with her work in Stardom have not seen before. She may rocket up my list pretty quickly. NWO Matt says, I'm still here solo. The learning tree will never leave you. Is that a threat? Is that a promise or a threat? I'm not sure. I think he's threatening me. Prince Vegeta, if you had the book during the Nexus angle, would you have Wade Barrett win the WWE title at Night of Champions 2010 and hold it until WrestleMania 27 to drop it to John Cena? Cena wins and the Nexus disbands. Yeah, why not? As compared to what they did? Why not? Gotta keep the Nexus hot. I know Barrett was still new at that time. They were rookies. So, you know, would it have been too much too soon? Maybe, but you gotta keep that angle hot. And they could have. If they really wanted to, they could have. They could have kept the Nexus unbeaten for a lot longer. And they could have given Barrett a run. You know, the Nexus, I think the Nexus could have gotten over in a big way had they not killed it. There's our boy Meat with the 99.99. Thank you again for the bomb. LC Killer 17, I thought Blair Davenport was Jamie Hayter. Nope. NWO Matt, learning tree here to support Solo beating COVID. I think you got that in reverse. COVID is beating me. Not the other way around. Joseph Brooks, who's an athlete that could be a wrestler if they ever decided to train for it and take it seriously? First name to come to mind for me is LeBron James. He is 6'8". Is he 6'8"? Yeah. He's 6'8", 275 pounds. That's the perfect size for a world champion. It's impossible to know. I mean, you've got super athletes in other sports who probably have tried to train pro wrestling and they just don't take to it as well. Not everybody is cut out to be a pro wrestler. I mean, I would never have expected Logan Paul to take to this as quickly and as easily as he has. I mean, he is tremendous. Logan Paul is tremendous in the way that he has taken to pro wrestling. So you've got plenty of football players and NBA players who are big WWE fans who I'm sure would love to do it. But as far as who would adapt to it the best, I have no idea. Because it's impossible to know. I got a question actually in the podcast a couple weeks ago. And somebody wanted to know if Bo Jackson had ever tried to be a wrestler. And I don't think he did. But I look at him and I'm like, man, you know, he was so great at multiple sports and very few people, like maybe Deion Sanders and a handful of other people, but like people who are that multi-talented, I feel like, would probably have a better shot at picking up wrestling better than most. So I don't know, again, if he ever was a wrestling fan or had interest in it, but that would have been interesting. If someone like Bo Jackson had tried to take a stab at pro wrestling, I think that would have been interesting. Hey, Mark Kwan, thank you for the 10 spot. Thank you, brother. Tyler Hansen with the $50 bomb. That RKO on Cody will receive the biggest pop of that night, followed by the most nuclear heat. 09 and 2020 Randy Orton versus current Cody could not only result in a dark horse feud of the year, but also bring Homelander Cody that much closer to WWE. I just want to say thank you for not saying that it will feed families. Thank you, Tyler. Samoan fam, buy, sell, or buy or sell on the better Joe. Samoa Joe or Joe Pesci? Samoa Joe. I love Joe Pesci, but I will never vote against Samoa Joe. I just look at it and go, who would win in a fight? Samoa Joe. And were you a G.I. Joe guy growing up? It was not a G.I. Joe guy. Just never got into it. Dom Joseph, what if John Cena was fired in 2002? Where would the company be today? If it weren't for Cena, I would not watch WWE. Well, you just answered your own question. I mean, there'd be a lot of people who would not have probably started watching WWE. And I think the company would have been in rough shape if they couldn't come up with a solution. I'm not sure Randy Orton would be that answer because I don't think Orton was... Orton didn't have the kind of top guy charisma that John Cena did that allowed them to make all the money they did on merch and just market him in the way that they did. Batista, I don't know that Batista would have been as successful in that spot if he was the guy. You know, he was never the guy. They went with, let's be honest, they went with Cena as the guy. So I think it would have been rough going for them. But again, it's impossible to answer a question like that because you just never know. You give somebody else the opportunity to get over. Maybe they get over even bigger than John Cena did, right? I mean, we don't know. That's why it's a what-if question. They would have had to try with somebody else. I can't tell you whether or not it would have worked any better or any worse. Cena had certain skills that, you know, made him successful in that spot as the face of the company that they can market around. He was great on promos. You know, he had great charisma that not a lot of people have. And they parlayed that into, what was it, 10 straight years probably on top. Really, right? It's about a decade. Longer than most. DEH Sires with the $4.99. Whoever saw that Mercedes Vacker match instantly fell in love with Stephanie that they got that contract ready ASAP. Julia, my debut at WWE's Japan show. Well, Stephanie Vacker is debuting for WWE in Mexico this weekend, so they are not wasting any time. I'm going to talk more about her on Sunday. A lot of people got on her for being unprofessional and ragging on her for not dropping titles before leaving without knowing the full story. And so a lot of those people, after today, with the announcement of her working the WWE shows this weekend, are looking mighty stupid after jumping down this woman's throat on social media yesterday. We have got Shubham Mishra with the $6 super chat. Get well soon, Solo Monster, our SmackDown champion, so true. Like a Royal Rumble victory, we will cheer till you break through. Cheers from Dubai. Oh, he was trying to rhyme. He was like singing me a song. Look at that. Our SmackDown champ so true. Like a Royal Rumble victory, we'll cheer till you break through. Look at that. Thank you. Look at that. All the way from Dubai. Thank you very much. Breaking out into song. Meet Huncho with the $4.99. Stephanie is wrestling sooner than we anticipated in WWE. In your opinion, who should her first opponent be? And why is Megan Bain not on national TV? I don't know. That's a really good question. She's going to be. I'm sure she's going to NXT first. Like, she'll wrestle this weekend in Mexico, but she's going to the Performance Center. So, I don't know. As far as NXT is concerned, who they'll match her up with right away. I don't know if it'll be Roxanne Perez. I thought they would go into Roxanne and Julia first. So, I don't know, but it sounds like she's going to NXT. Based on Shawn Michaels tweeting, "See you in Orlando," I think that gives you a pretty good sense of where she's going. Creflo Half Dollar with a couple of super chats. "I want to see a Joe Hendry parody with Solid Monster." Hey, Joe Hendry is always welcome to reach out. He's not under a WWE contract yet, so he's always welcome to reach out. Let's make something happen. Creflo Half Dollar, "Nia Jax with the line of the night about Bayley." Oh, the BBL line? I figured that would get a reaction out of some of you. You'll notice she said that. She made that BBL comment, and then she looked at Bayley's ass when she said it. Mark Kwan says, "Get well soon." Also, shout out to everybody in the chat. You guys make these live streams fun and entertaining. That's right. Shout out to everybody in the chat. Samoan fan, "Booking aside, best women's roster, WWE, AEW, or TNA?" It's between WWE and AEW. And I think if you include the women that they have at the Performance Center in NXT right now, you know, it's hard for me to vote against WWE, but AEW's women's division is pretty fucking stacked. You know, it really is. I'd go WWE right now, but WWE and AEW right now, man, I mean, their women's divisions are stacked. They're stacked with talent that can carry them for years to come. Bobby Means, "Vacker, Julia, and Delta could be WWE's big three." Jordynne Grace, right? Her contract with TNA is up in January. I think we all know where she's going to end up. Melick Gaming, "When Roman Reigns comes back, do you think he will have to run the gauntlet against the other members of the Bloodline before going for solo Sokoa so they can drag it out until the Royal Rumble? Or is that too long?" Well, I mean, nothing with this Bloodline story is too long because it's been going for years and it's going to continue to go for many more years. But you make an interesting point there. Why the Royal Rumble? If you're going to drag it out until the Rumble, you may as well go all the way to WrestleMania at that point. So if Roman had to run the gauntlet, I mean, but let's be honest here. Does anybody want to see Roman Reigns against Tongaloa? I don't think anybody wants to see that. Tama Tonga, okay, I could see that. Jacob Fatu, absolutely. And then he finally gets the solo. Can we skip over Tongaloa, maybe? I don't really want to see that. DEH says, "Naomi has been terrible, almost like she is lazy." I wouldn't call her lazy. I think she looked a lot more crisp in her TNA run. I'm not sure what's different from then to now, but can't call her lazy. Samoan fan, "Does Noah Mark have a crush on you?" Probably. Samoan fan also, "Is the Learning Tree worse than Retribution?" Is the Learning Tree worse than Retribution? That's a good question. I'm going to say no. Because Retribution was actually pushed as a top-line main event faction. Or at least that was the idea. The Learning Tree is a mid-card gimmick. It's not meant to be anything more than that. Now, if he was coming out doing the Learning Tree and having main events every week, that would be a different story. The Juliet, "Who is the worst women's wrestler all time and why?" Let's not talk about Rosa Mendez tonight, please. Bleed Boston, "Do you think Bayley retains over Nia at SummerSlam?" I said earlier, I'm 50-50 on this right now. I think, honestly, it could go either way. I am going to lean towards yes. I think Bayley wins and then Tiffany cashes it. Joseph Brooks, buy or sell on which move was more important in their careers and for the brand at the time? Cena being drafted to Raw in 05 or Batista going to SmackDown in 05? Cena going to Raw in 05 was the more important of the two moves. Well, I guess you could say both of them, really, because they weren't going to be on the same brand, so Batista going to SmackDown meant Cena was going to Raw. But Cena to Raw meant more. I remember when he came out during, it was during the Jericho talk show segment, the highlight reel, and the reaction that Cena got when he came out was gigantic. People were shocked when they saw him come out on Raw. Achilles heel. Feels like not enough people talk about the Cruiserweight Classic back in 2016. What were your thoughts on it? I remember loving the Cruiserweight Classic. I thought it was great. They even got Kota Ibushi to come in. They had some great matches during that tournament. It was something that WWE had never done before, especially bringing some talent in from the outside. So, you know, at the time, it was unique, and I thought that it really worked. Groovy Goose. Learning Tree makes me miss Jericho's WWE theme. Ken Masters Hadouken. Do you book CM Punk to win the Royal Rumble? Who desperately needs the Royal Rumble win the most? Men's and women's Royal Rumble. It's too early. It's too early for me to say. I don't know what's going to be going on, you know, when Survivor Series rolls around. I mean, I could tell you right now that Punk would make sense. Punk got hurt in the Rumble this year. You know, we don't even know if the guy's body can hold up. He has not demonstrated that he can stay healthy. It has been one serious injury after another for the past 2 years, 2.5 years. So the first order of business is for him to get cleared and come back and demonstrate that he can actually stay healthy and he's not, you know, fragile Phil. Once he can do that, and if there's a story to be told about him going after the World Heavyweight title and trying to get his first WrestleMania main event, then I would say, yeah, CM Punk would have to be one of the favorites to win the Royal Rumble. But I can't sit here and tell you that right now I think he's going to win for sure, because I don't even know what his status is going to be. If we look ahead to what the title matches could possibly be next year, is Cody going to be the champion? Is Cody going to defend against The Rock? Or are they going to do Rock and Roman? That would leave Cody open for somebody else. John Cena has said this is going to be his final Royal Rumble. Do you have John Cena win the Royal Rumble and go to WrestleMania in the main event? I don't think so. In fact, I'm going to lay out my plans for John Cena on Sunday and how I would book his final year. So he'll be in there. But, you know, the thing with Punk, though, is he doesn't have to win the Rumble. He could always win the Elimination Chamber, right? So he doesn't have to win the Rumble necessarily. But I do think he'd have to be one of the favorites right now going into it. Just think about potential title matches. We think about potential title matches. Gosh. Yeah, Punk and Cena have to be the two favorites, I think, going in to 2025. As far as women's is a little bit tougher. I hate to even say this. I really do. I am by no means
Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
I am by no means pitching this idea.
Roman Reigns gently down the stream.
But you have to put Charlotte Flair in the column as one of the early favorites to win the Women's Royal Rumble. I don't want to see it. I'd rather see anybody else but her win. Like, been there, done that already. But it just depends who's the champion going into WrestleMania. If Rhea Ripley, for some reason, does not get her Women's World title back soon, and Rhea was going into the Rumble as a challenger, it was in the Rumble match, Rhea Ripley would have to be the favorite. But what about, you know, what if Becky Lynch comes back, you know, and she wins the Royal Rumble? What if, God, I don't know, Bianca Belair? Look, people haven't really been talking about this. But last year, I was talking about how we need Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair at WrestleMania. Now nobody talks about it because everybody's focused on Bianca and Jade and how that could potentially be a WrestleMania match. I still want to see Rhea Ripley against Bianca Belair. And if that means Bianca wins the Royal Rumble, then maybe Bianca should win the Royal Rumble, right? I just don't know who the champions are going to be at that time, and that will color my opinion of who I think should win the Royal Rumble. So again, you're asking me in July. I can't say for sure. Arabian Night, I've recently viewed some old Mid-South, and wow, JYD was insanely over and made them a lot of money. Is he the most over African-American of all time? I think that would be The Rock. And that's going to ignite a whole other debate. I don't give a shit. The answer is The Rock. But JYD in Mid-South was super over. He was very over. He did make Bill Watts a lot of money. He made himself a lot of money. And of course, he pissed it all away on fucking drugs. But that's a whole other story. He's got to be in the conversation, though. You know, how could he not be? Donnie Yasu, seeing Joe Hendry's popularity rising and a lot of it doing with his theme song really puts in perspective why we need good music in wrestling. I say it all the time. Theme music is so important to a wrestler's presentation. And when you have just a bunch of Def Rebel themes, you know, and people are just completely shitting on it all the time, it really illustrates just how bad the music situation is right now in WWE. And I really wish they would do something about it. Achilles heel. Most people would agree the 2010s were a low point of WWE. Despite that, what were your personal favorite highlights from that decade? Well, we had the Summer of Punk in 2011. We had the rise of Daniel Bryan and the Yes Movement in 2013 into 2014. That was a definite highlight. The John Cena U.S. Title Open Challenge was fun for those few months. So those were a few that jump out at me. Of course, I also look at the early NXT days. I have a soft spot for the early NXT days when they first hit the network in 2014. Black and Gold was the best era of NXT, so gotta mention the Black and Gold, of course. But those early NXT days, the first Brooklyn show, which I was at, Sasha against Bayley, still the best women's match in WWE history. There's a lot of really good moments and matches from that decade. It may not have been the best decade. There was a lot of shit that you had to sit through, but there was a lot of good stuff. You can't let people say there wasn't a lot of good stuff during that decade. Samoan fan, on Sunday, you mentioned the WrestleMania's ending in zeros. One cool thing is that they all ended with the longtime veteran getting their big moment. Yeah, it's true. Bret Hart, Chris Benoit, Daniel Bryan. Cody Rhodes, well, I guess I guess we look at Cody as a longtime veteran. Is Cody a longtime veteran? I don't know if Cody fits that criteria. I don't know if I look at him as the longtime grizzled veteran. Although I guess when he won the title, though, he was older than Brett was, right? When Brett won it in 94. Because Cody now is, what, 39? So how old was Brett in 94? Brett had to be early to mid-30s. And Alex says, Brother Solo, what went wrong with Kenta's run in WWE? Can you ever see him make a return? I don't think we're getting a Kenta return. What went wrong is he got hurt. Suffered a very bad injury. He was out for like 18 months because I think they botched the surgery or something happened. And He just never recovered from that, you know? He was never he was just never the same. So I think that more than anything else is really what did him in. Joseph Brooks, with the 499. Going back to athletes that could wrestle, how do you think LT, Rodman, and Malone did when they got the chance to wrestle? Lawrence Taylor did one match, and I thought he was more impressive than I expected him to be. Now, a lot of that had to do with Bam Bam Bigelow being a very good ring general that night and leading him along and selling for him and making him look as good as possible. And LT was so fucking blown up when that match was over. But again, he's not a wrestler. But I thought LT for one night in one match, I thought he did fine. Karl Malone, I also thought looked fine to me. And he looked better than Dennis Rodman did. Dennis Rodman got the character aspect of it. Karl Malone, from a physical standpoint, I thought was way more impressive to me than Dennis Rodman was. Anyway, you guys have been very supportive tonight. I thank you for all the love. So let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Be the Booker. It's Queen Nia. Queen Nia Jax. Having the crown placed upon her head. All right, let's kick things. Oh, my God. Wow. This is quite the start here to Tag Team Be the Booker. We begin, believe it or not, with former WCW Tag Team Champions. Bret Hart and Bill Goldberg. This was happier times with Bret and Goldberg. Let's see who they're going to be. What a photo. I know. Yeah, it's a hell of an image. You almost don't even believe it's real. But it is. Going to be Bret Hart and Goldberg taking on the Lucha Bros, Penta and Rey Fénix. Man, get Rey Fénix in the ring with Bret Hart. Oof. That'd be something. That would be something, now wouldn't it? All right, now we got women's Be the Booker that we got to do. Move on to our next match here. Off to a great start here, former TBS champion, Chris Statlander, who hopefully will actually have a match at the Wembley Stadium show. I'd love to see her and Willow Nightingale go at it, maybe with a stipulation, one-on-one. Maybe they'll go at it here and Be the Booker. What do you think? Maybe we'll get them here. Let's see. Chris Statlander going to go one-on-one with the Women's World Champion, Liv Morgan. Wow. Liv Morgan will not be the Women's World Champion for that much longer. Although I actually don't think that she has to lose it at SummerSlam. If she wrestles Rhea Ripley, which I'm sure she will. I don't think she has to lose it at SummerSlam. So, there you go. That's a pretty marquee match right there. And then we go to men's Be the Booker. Let's see. One match left. We got one match left to go here. What do we got? What do we got? We got Hot Rod. We got Hot Rod. Rowdy Roddy Piper taking his rightful place in the main event. No Hogan to ruin it. Hogan's always stealing his spotlight. Not tonight he won't. Roddy Piper gonna go one-on-one with Vikingo. Oh my God. I love it. I love that match. I love that match so much. What a clash of styles. Rowdy Roddy Piper against Vikingo. Can you imagine? Can you imagine early and mid 80s Roddy Piper cutting promos on this Mexican luchador. He would be kicked off the air and canceled in 2024 for the things that I think he would have said back then. But Rowdy Roddy Piper against Vikingo is what gives us a clean sweep here in Be the Booker. I love it. That is a match I never in a million years would have expected. What do I think, Solo, what do I think a promo between Roddy Piper and The Rock in their prime would look like? Oh shit, look, it's Minoru Suzuki. It's Suzuki Goon. A real life Suzuki Goon come to life. There's no scarier image than that. Minoru Suzuki with a gun in his hand. He's scary enough on his own without a weapon. Now he's got a gun in his hand. Prime Piper and Prime Rock on promos would be just the goat of promo segments. I mean, you get two of the best to ever do it. What more needs to be said? It'd be amazing. I think as far as who would win in a promo battle between Piper and The Rock, I feel like Rock would have his kind of silly insults and everything, and he'd get off some really good shots. I do think in the end, though, Piper would probably dissect him, though. I do. If I had to pick a winner between them, I got to go Piper on that one. David says, the learning tree and sperm Kevin Nash super chat. It might send Solo spiraling into insanity. I'm already halfway there. Why not just finish the job? Oh, man. Yeah, Piper would tear his ass up. Now, what about Prime Piper and CM Punk in a promo battle? That one, I'm not so sure. That one would be a little more competitive, I think. All right, thank you, guys. I'm going to head out. Be well. Stay safe. And I will be back with you on Sunday. That's going to be episode 870 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off. And then back here on Monday night, after Monday Night Raw, Rhea Ripley opening the show. She is not going to be very happy. Until then, have yourselves a great weekend. Take care, guys.